You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, then everybody'd be surfing like California. You'd see them wearing their baggies, Warachi sandals too, a bushy, bushy blonde hairdo, surfing USA. You'll catch them surfing at Delta, Ventura County line, Santa Cruz and Trail, Australia, Caribbean, all over Manhattan, and down the Tahiti Way. Everybody's gone surfing USA. We'll all be planning out a route.
Beach Boys, 7:26 on a Thursday morning. Sad news from the continent of Africa. Three Green Berets were killed in the country of Niger. When their patrol came under hostile fire in southwest Niger. So, Niger. Now, if you're like me, you're asking, right, where the hell's Niger? Like, I'm not up on my African geography as I probably ought to be. Okay, so, let's talk about Africa. Across the top of Africa, right? You have Morocco. You have so you're looking at the Straits of Gibraltar, right? Okay. So at the very top of Africa, you have the nation of Libya, and then to the east of Libya, you have Egypt. So from east to west, Egypt, Libya, Algeria, yay, and then Morocco along the coast, the northwest coast. Okay, south of that, in the middle, okay, in a band that goes from east to west, so south of Egypt, Sudan, south of Libya, next to Sudan is Chad. South of Algeria and Libya is Niger, right smack in the middle of the continent. And then west of that is Mali and Mauritania. Okay? So there's a little bit of your geography lesson. South of Niger is Nigeria. So they were killed in southwest. They were killed in southwest Niger. So, the details that we have so far, they were providing advice and assistance to Nigerian, and that's spelled N-I-G-E-R-I-E-N. Security forces that were conducting counterterrorism operations about 125 miles north of the city of Niamey. Niamey is the largest city in southwest Niger. So, three Green Berets killed, two others wounded. One service member from the security forces of Niger was also killed. The attack likely by Al-Qaeda, according to an Associated Press report. the wounded service members are in stable condition. They've been transported to Landstuhl Regional Medical Center in Germany that does such great work in the region. So we'll keep our eyes open for anything going on, any new developments there. Their task force provides assistance, shares information and intelligence with U.S. partners on the ground to combat Al-Qaeda in the region. So, not a good day, not a good Wednesday evening for American forces. So thoughts and prayers to their families. The other top stories in the early bird, and then we'll get Bob Nielsen on. Airbus defense unit freezes. May miss its cash goals. So they may have to take drastic measures to save that business, which does a lot of defense business. Interesting story. And, you know, we talk about different things, and one of the things we talk about is our dysfunctional Congress. The Heritage Foundation, 218 Index of U.S. Military Strength, which offers reviews of the past year's defense issues, talks about a significantly weaker America in the study, and warns of an eroding U.S. military. So, anyway, so we'll come back to that later. And then Marines may move the Crucible to an earlier portion of boot camp. So, changes in recruit training and the way the pipeline works to make it to perform in a more optimal fashion. So, we'll talk about that. So, Bob Nielsen going to join us here. And Nielsen watched with great interest. I think, as most people know, if you heard him here on the program when he was on, he watched with great interest. I think as a lot of Vietnam veterans did relative to the Ken Burns series. On the Vietnam War. So joining us now from, I believe in Maryland, is Bob Nielsen. So Bob, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Where are you today?
I'm in Maryland on the Eastern Shore, just across the, Chesapeake Bay from Annapolis.
All right. All right.
In my world headquarters, in my closet.
Wait a minute. What do you mean you're across the Chesapeake Bay? Annapolis is on the same side of Chesapeake Bay as you, yes?
I'm in the Eastern Shore, God's country.
Annapolis
is on the Western Shore. Yeah, I'm 60 miles from Walter Reed. Got to go through Annapolis and across the Bay Bridge.
Oh, so I was thinking you were in Annapolis, but you're not.
No. I was there 20 years ago.
Okay, and so across the bay from Annapolis is Stevensville?
Yep. Used to live there, and now I live in Centerville.
The things you
learn. Farm country. I look out my window, and I see cornfields.
The things you learn every day. All right. Well, that's what's the weather like now that fall is upon us?
Spectacular. Cool mornings, 50 degrees, sunny, bright, couple of clouds. Haven't had rain in a week and a half. It's beautiful.
A lot of people like this time of year because you get away from the heat and the humidity, and the weather turns really beautiful and comfortable. And are you one of those guys, or are you a summer guy?
No, I prefer the fall and the spring.
Like many people. Wanted to have you on this morning, and for those of you who don't know, Bob is a Vietnam veteran, a combat engineer, 1966-67, served in the Republic of Vietnam, and wanted to get your thoughts, and we would have done it earlier this week, just so everybody knows, except for the incident in Las Vegas that sucked the air out of the room for a couple of days. So Bob, first of all, thanks for coming on. And your thoughts on 10 episodes between, I want to say, about 17 and a half hours of documentary devoted to the Vietnam War. At the end of it, and after having a few days to think about it, what were your thoughts?
Well, when I first started watching it, I was very apprehensive. In fact, I had serious debates whether I was even going to look at it, except I heard Carl Melanthus on your show recommended very highly several times. And I've read Carl Melanthus's books about Vietnam, and Carl Melanthus is a remarkable Marine, and I said, if he's recommending this, I'll give it a shot. But I fully turned on the first session thinking I might shut it off in 15 minutes or a half hour and say the hell with it. And I ended up watching all 10 sessions, almost 20 hours worth. I'd record it and watch it in the morning because I didn't want any distractions or anything. And came away with the feeling that I thought it was remarkably well balanced, considering most of the BS that's been put out by Hollywood and the press over the last 50 years. I thought the program did a very good job of presenting a number of different perspectives, not only from the eyes of the military and the guys on the ground and in the air, but it portrayed how screwed up Washington, D.C. was. It portrayed the insight of the North Vietnamese military and the Viet Cong, the South Vietnamese, in a way that I'd frankly never seen before. And I'd been back to Vietnam in 97 and frankly never saw or got the feelings and thoughts of the guys that we were fighting with. And it even kept the crap like Jane Fonda presented in a perspective where you could see what a really bad person she was. So I came away pleased, but I got to tell you, I bet there was probably 10 times during the course of the 10 series that I was crying sitting on the sofa watching the damn thing.
We'll get to you crying and being a pussy in a second, okay? I want to, the Jane Fonda thing, interesting. When people think of Vietnam, right, there's certain images and events that come to mind, right? They are the Gulf of Tonkin, off some of them. They are My Lai. They are Jane Fonda. They are our bombing of North Vietnam. They are our incursion into Cambodia. They are the pictures that were so powerful in our media,
the one girl the naked girl, the
execution, all of that. This is just my opinion, because the more I watched it, I became interested from a couple of different perspectives. One is as a storyteller myself. You know that you can skew the story by who you decide to include and not include in the narrative. So when I have guests on, right, and I line the program up on one side, I know what the narrative of the program is going to be. So I began to look at it and the problem of how do you present something as complex as Vietnam, to people that many of whom don't have any recollection of it. And so I'm curious about what you thought about the way, because one would expect that My Lai would take a prominent place, yet it did not. One would expect that Jane Fonda would take a prominent place, but it didn't. It seemed like all of them were kept, although they were covered, they weren't dwelt upon. They were looked at as another piece of the mosaic that was a part of Vietnam. And in that way, I thought Burns did very well by not allowing the greater narrative to be skewed by those media high points, if you will. I'm curious.
Burns and
your thought about that.
Novak. Burns and Novak, the woman with him. I mean, she did a remarkable job. She was the one that traveled back and forth to Vietnam to do the interviews.
Oh.
But for example, on Jane Fonda, usually what everybody sees is one picture of Jane Fonda sitting in an anti-aircraft gun with a big shooting smile on her face.
Right. That's,
they don't see that she was there 10 days being interviewed on radio saying that our pilots were war criminals, that they ought to be executed, and all the crap that she was doing. As far as I'm concerned, that was treasonous. And so I thought the program did a pretty balanced job of showing the crap that she was really doing that was despicable. On My Lai, they portrayed it, I thought, in a fairly balanced way. You've interviewed a lot of guys that are Vietnam veterans talking about My Lai, and they virtually all have been unanimous in that it was shitty leadership. There was a total lack of leadership on the part of the lieutenant and the company commander, Callie and Medina. And that came through loud and clear. And I got the impression, watching the video, the same thing was coming across. And what I was concerned, Mac, was I wanted something presented that the younger people, the people that are in their 20s and 30s and 40s, can get a semi-balanced perspective of what happened in Vietnam. Because for 50 years, we haven't been producing that. And I've talked to some of the young vets and some of the young therapists of Walter Reed and say, give me your opinions when you go look at this. Which one of the things I find interesting is most of the guys that I know that served in Vietnam that are still alive all watched it and were generally pretty positive. Now, I have a bunch of friends that didn't serve, and they're kind of reluctant to watch it. And I find that intriguing because I think that opens wounds in their minds also.
What
would I,
so
I thought Novak.
What, wait a minute.
And Burns did.
What wound does it open in the minds of people that didn't go there?
Yeah, because it was very easy not to be part of the military. It was very easy not to be part of the service. It was very easy to stay the hell out of being involved in it. And, you know, admittedly, when I went over there, I was over there in 66. I was a young Marine captain. I had just finished my 3 years commitment. Vietnam was starting up. I said, God, I can't miss this great opportunity. I'll sign up for another year if you send me over. I wanted to go and do what I really believe was the right thing to do. Only after I was there about 2 weeks did I realize how screwed up it was. But I wanted to go and see what it was about. But a whole lot of people not only didn't go into service, ended up resisting it in different ways, and I think this opened wounds for them also, the documentary. You know, people have hidden away a lot of their feelings from that time and locked it up in the box on both sides.
It was interesting. In fact, illustrative of your point was the guy who went to Canada, right?
Oh, the guy that went to Canada and every one of the vets that they interviewed on the program, I think there were 8 or 10 of them, the emotions they showed, you could feel the emotions coming out of Carl Melantis' mouth.
Yeah.
Those couple of other Marines, the guy that went to Canada, you know, what he went through.
Well, what he still goes through, that when he talks about he renounced his American citizenship, the stupidest thing he's ever done in his life.
Yeah, and he admits it on TV.
Right. No, I got an email for you, but before we get to that, I thought that they did a good job. And what I love about documentary filmmaking is, you know, you allow them to tell the story. You allow them to tell the story. So you can imagine them for 10 years sitting there with storyboards, right? What do we include? What do we not include in this narrative of Vietnam? And I imagine that had to be excruciating sometimes. I'm sure they had compelling stuff that they say, God, we got to find a way to get this in there, but we can't. If we go down that rabbit hole, you know, that's another half hour that we don't have, you know, that we don't have to do. And I also thought it was interesting, the metamorphosis of many of Musgrave's one of them. There's another Marine who's a shorter guy who's one of them. I want to say that the other one was at, the Sorter Marine was at Khe Sanh. I want to say, but as they come home, they go from I'm right at the start of the baby boom post World War II, right? I grow up with my dad, my uncles, the guys in my neighborhood, my teachers, my coaches are all veterans of World War II or Korea, and now Viet Cong, right? Right, Vietnam comes, and I'm going to go do my part, and I'm going to join that fraternity.
Yep.
Right, and because you're post World War II, man, that was a lot of movies and a lot of stuff.
We were raised on John Wayne, winning every bat we went into,
right.
And Victory of Sea.
Right, and you know,
and everything was going to be hunky dory, and you'd come home to parades, and you'd come home to welcome wagon, and everybody celebrating. And it didn't happen that way. You could see every one of these vets was really, really stressed by what he went through when he came home. You know, I've told you for 10, 15 years, I didn't talk about it to anybody but my wife. And my wife had a good friend killed over there, and we had a tough time even discussing it between ourselves. And nobody on the outside wanted to talk about it. It was, you know, a crazy, crazy period. So you locked it all up, put it in a box. But I think I'm realizing how much the people that didn't serve did the same thing. They locked up their emotions in the box and put it away and forgot about it. And this opens that box in about 1,000 different ways.
What were the things that you found most? That's what the email asked. Mac, always enjoy hearing Bob, whether you guys are talking about transitioning in jobs, whether you guys are talking about post-combat related mental health, or my favorite subject that he talks about is Vietnam. I'm curious, what did he find most emotional about it?
Most emotional, there's probably a short list of them. It was McNamara and Johnson constantly lying to the public about what was going on.
And Marlanus, and that's when we saw Marlanus's jaw shaking at the end of his little comment about it, yes?
Right. The second thing that struck me was the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese. Now, when I was there, 66, 67, we were mostly fighting Viet Cong regional forces in I Corps. We really didn't hit the NVA. I was at Chu Lai, south of Da Nang. But seeing the emotions and feelings of those guys and them going through the same problems that we were going through, you kind of learn to just think that they're not real human beings when you're over there fighting them, and you get a different perspective in your head. But they were going through exactly the same things. I probably read 1,000 books on Vietnam since I got back. So I learned a lot of what was in the documentary after I'd done my tour. But you see things. I mean, the whole Ho Chi Minh Trail was absolutely mind-boggling. And they kept it going and operating, and it's unbelievable. The last piece that really hit me was I got back. You couldn't talk to anybody about Vietnam. You couldn't put on your resume. You couldn't mention it in a job interview, anything like that. And then what broke the ice was the creation by Jan Scruggs and some others of the Vietnam Memorial. And that last segment, segment 10, where they talk about the Vietnam Memorial, had me sitting there with tears running down my cheeks, because the Vietnam Memorial opened it up that, hey, this was a war that we all learned a whole lot of lessons from. And don't shit on the guys that were over there fighting it. They were the ones that were the goddamn victims of this thing. And, you know, you and Mike, the gunner, and all the rest of them have talked about when you walk down the Vietnam Memorial, it literally sucks the air out of your chest. And I've had many people that I've taken there, I've been there probably a couple hundred times myself, and it said it's the most awesome thing they've ever seen, because you don't expect it when you walk around that corner. So those were four or five of the key points that kept hitting at me. The other thing I think, Mac, that I should point out, and I've sent you emails on this, is thank God people stayed in the military, that kept it glued together, because in 75, we'd already been out of Vietnam for a couple of years, but in 75, I mean, if you look back, you couldn't even get people to fill the slots at Annapolis and West Point. They couldn't fill those slots. They weren't teaching history about Vietnam at the military academies. Our military was really in a lousy, lousy, beat-up position. And thank God guys like Barney Barnum and a bunch of others, Joe Horn, you know, people that you guys know, stayed in and kept the damn thing glued together. I mean, the incredible military that you had for Iraq and Afghanistan is a result of what a whole lot of guys has stayed with it and kept it going.
Who was the commandant that cleaned out the Marine Corps in the late 70s? Who was that?
Green was the commandant when I was over there, and I forget who took over after him. I really kind of tuned out to a lot of that stuff. I do know they had huge drug problems back in the States at the Briggs. When I got back, I was the liaison at St. Albans, but I was also working with the brig in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and they were having major, major problems out of Camp Pendleton with the drugs and AWL and all that kind of stuff. And I forget who took over after Green as commandant.
And I think his comment, if I'm not mistaken, was I don't care if it's me and my driver when we're done with this. Get them out of here.
And they really took steps to get rid of the bad guys.
And they did.
That's what you had to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Between the racism, and I remember reading your articles. You know, I remember there was somebody threw a hand grenade into a Ku Klux Klan meeting at Camp Pendleton. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. I mean, people like, you hear that now, you're like, what? And you're just like, how could that happen? But that was, you know, which brings me to another thought. One of the things that really animated the war protest was the draft. God forbid that we would ever have to go back to the draft again. I cannot imagine a worse circumstance than trying to go over and do that stuff with guys who don't want to be there.
And yet we had draftees that were goddamn good Marines. I mean, some unbelievable ones. One of the best squad leaders I had in Vietnam had a couple of years at Berkeley and got drafted. He was a sergeant. And he was unbelievable. But we also, and one of the things the documentary did not talk very much about, was when McNamara instituted that program of drafting a bunch of what I will call challenged individuals.
What did they call that? Like, McNamara's what? 10,000? McNamara's 100,000?
Yeah. And that, when some of them started showing up, it was beyond disgraceful what they did. And, you know, talk about an unbelievable thing. I mean, they were accepting people into the Marine Corps with GCTs under 100, for Christ's sake. It was unbelievable.
For those of you who don't know, it was called Project 100,000, also McNamara's 100,000. It was a program initiated in 1966 to recruit soldiers that would previously have been below military mental or medical standards. It was initiated by Robert McNamara. At various times in its history, the U.S. military has recruited people who measured below specific mental and physical standards. Those who scored in certain lower percentiles of mental aptitude were admitted into the service during World War II, although this experience eventually led to a legal floor of IQ of 80 to enlist. Another instance occurred in the 1980s due to a misnormed U.S. Army ASVAB test. The project was in response to Johnson's War on Poverty by giving training and opportunity to the uneducated and the poor. The recruited men were classified as new standards men, or informally and pejoratively as the moron corps. and had scores in Category 4 of the Armed Forces Qualification Test, which places them into the 10 to 30 percentile. So you can see that, So
Mac, we one guy show up in my company that we couldn't issue ammunition to and couldn't let him out of the perimeter in July. I mean, he was literally totally dysfunctional. And this wasn't just my decision. This was every damn guy in the company.
Right.
And he didn't know he was that way. I mean, that's how bad the damn thing was. How the hell he got through boot camp is beyond me.
And then when you look at the problem of Vietnam itself, here you have the Kennedy administration, and before that the Eisenhower administration, watching Vietnam, thinking, okay, the whole domino thing, right? And let's just look at, for the sake of discussion, let's just view the domino thing as a legitimate fear, American fear. Now, in retrospect, we know communism ultimately, falls on the ash heap of history because it's not sustainable. You can't, and especially in an age, China will have its day of reckoning. Russia will have another day of reckoning.
Economically,
right.
Economically, communism begins to fall apart. But I'm glad you brought this up because there's one thing I want to reiterate that I wish had been included in the documentary. I think I told you I was involved in running Turner International. We were working in 35 different countries, and I would go to this thing that Switzerland called the World Economic Forum, and I had a chance to have a conversation with Lee Kuan Yew, the prime minister for about 35 years of Singapore, the monopolistic capital of the world, and he did a phenomenal job running the country. And I happened to talk to him, and it was 95, 94, something like that, and I mentioned to him I'd been a Marine in Vietnam, and he looked at me in a very unique Oriental way and said, Bob, he says, you guys saved Southeast Asia. The problem is you're the only ones in the world that don't know it. He said Southeast Asians know it. So there was an element to the domino theory that did make some sense. But, of course, like so many other things, that got swept away by the press in Hollywood and swept under the carpet. But you notice, once we pulled out of there, communism never really did spread in the traditional way in Southeast Asia.
Well,
and a capitalistic economy has done much more to help it.
I read someplace recently that Vietnam, that the 60s was a high water mark for international communism. And then, from 60s, to the 80s, you see this kind of sideways movement but we don't really understand, but it's decaying inside. And then you see the Soviet Union falls apart and the Soviet Union Russia will fall apart again. I will tell you this. If you're in Iraq and Afghanistan, one of the first things that guys like Saddam Hussein have to control, the Saudi royal family have to control. They have to control communications and what gets written and what the people are allowed to see in the nation. And that's increasingly more difficult. And where there's free communication of ideas, where people can read Voltaire, where they can read Thomas Jefferson, right? That is, when that lightning gets out of the jar, you can't put it back in. And all you have to do is look at Poland, right? In the middle of the Soviet Union, to see what happens when that lightning gets out of the jar. And so, but the point I was trying to make about the domino theory. Let me make it even simpler.
Go ahead. But the Sony transistor radio came out during Vietnam. And not only were our guys listening to the Sony transistor radio, the goddamn Viet Cong and all Vietnamese were.
Right. Right.
So,
now,
communism when you have that.
Right. And you could tell them the only thing you can listen to on that is Pravda. And I say, okay. And then all of a sudden it's on the BBC. And then they're having a discussion. Right. then they're listening to both and they're having a discussion. And then they're going out and they're experiencing what they experience. And then they come back and they talk about it and they say, the BBC tells the truth more often than Pravda does. My question though about the domino theory. So you're looking at this and you see the Kennedy administration, the Johnson administration, or the Eisenhower administration, they're looking and saying, how do we How do we counter this, this red wave that's sweeping the planet? We fought it in Korea. If we, you know, where does it go next? You know, and as opposed to, I guess, saying, you know what, Vietnam doesn't mean shit to us. You know, it's a Pacific Ocean away. It can certainly be contained there. It's not going to Taiwan. It's not going to the Philippines. It's not going to Australia. So what are we worried about? You know, I think it was the post-war World War II hangover and this concept of American American infallibility. We can go. We're different. We'll do something different.
Yep.
And then
we're better, smarter than everybody else.
And then you look at the problem of and if you start drawing lines, okay, we're not going to invade North Vietnam because we don't want the Chinese coming across the border and we don't want to do Korea a second time. That means we're not going into Cambodia, we're not going into Laos because they might respond to that as well. So how in God's name do you draw up some kind of program if you can't choke off the Ho Chi Minh Trail? And to me, that's one of the things that you watch in that series, episode after episode, and then you see, you know, it was one of the, who is it, McPeak, the Air Force guy?
Yeah.
He talks about bombing. He must have been, you know, just a lieutenant while it was going on, but later rises to become, what, the Air Force Chief of Staff.
Right.
And so he talks about bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And he said, you know, we used to wonder, how did they put it back together every day? And then we got to see how they put it back together every day. It was amazing.
The McNamara was going to create this listening line along the whole DMZ and down the Laotian-Cambodian border with all these detectives that would detect any movement. So when a tiger comes through or an elephant comes through or a goddamn rat comes through, these devices go off. I mean, it was, you know, guys living in the White House are making these goddamn, or D.C. are making these crazy decisions.
But how do you...
If we don't
interdict the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and they can move equipment and they can move personnel, I won't say at will, but pretty much on their own timelines. How in God's name do we ever turn this thing around?
Mac, I asked myself about 2 months, 3 months into the thing. I was with First Shore Party. We get attached to 5th Marines. And we'd go out and do an operation, so I'd be with the infantry for a week, week and a half, whatever, for the operation. And how many times do you go into the same village? We kill a few of them, they kill a few of us. An hour after we pull out of the village, they're all back. The Viet Cong are back, the tunnels are back, everything's working. How many times do you do that before you wake up and realize one day, it ain't worth it? Now, the guys on the ground in the rice paddy knew that. The guys in Washington, D.C. in the Beltway didn't have a clue. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen the same thing in Iraq. How many times do you go into Fallujah? You know, how many times do you go into one of these cities? How many times do you go into Basra? We went into there in 91. You know, come on. And you're dealing not with a big communist country. You're dealing with a tribal community. That's the problem. You know, the Middle East, you've got tribe after tribe after tribe, and you're not going to change the Afghans, for crying out loud. They've been like this for 1,000 years.
All right, we'll get to that, yeah, okay.
We can't impose our standards, our wonderful Washington, D.C. human rights standards.
We'll get to that after we take a break. But, Bob, if you don't deal with the Ho Chi Minh Trail, how do you bring this, you know, that whole, who was it, Westmoreland's kill line?
Yeah.
It was his kill line, that we've crossed the kill line, which means we're killing more than they're bringing it into the country. All right, which is...
And it was finally Nixon that went in and bombed the shit out of that place over there in Laos and Cambodia. And it was Nixon that finally got us the hell out of the country.
All right. I got to take a break, and when we come back, though, some of the fallout, I want to ask you about the fallout among my friends that have watched it.
Yeah, and, I'd be very interested to hear.
And I'll just tease it with this. Among my friends, you know, the standard response is, how could we do it again? So I want to get, I want to hear what you have to say about that. My guest this morning on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio is Bob Nielsen. We're talking about the Ken Burns series, the Vietnam War. He produced that along with, her name is Novick, N-O-V-I-C-K. And Bob's calling her Novak, like she's just a standard Polak. She's not a standard Polak. She's a high-class Polak. Anyway, I'm not sure if she's Polish. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back in about 4 minutes. More of All Marine Radio on a Thursday, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Twelve on a Thursday. Mike McNamara with you, joined by Bob Nielsen. We're talking about the Ken Burns series on the Vietnam War. The standard response that my friends have, as I said before the break, after watching it, was as you're watching Vietnam, you're thinking about the road to war in Iraq and the expansion of the ground war in Afghanistan. And I think in both cases, we put our heads, you know, our head in our hands, and we think, how could we go down this road again? So I'm curious, while you were watching it, were you watching it from only the perspective of a Vietnam guy? Were you watching it with thoughts about our current conflict?
No, Max. I have a unique advantage in that over the past 15 plus years, I've been over to Walter Reed and Bethesda over 2,500 times, spending 2, 3, 4, 5 hours listening to the wounded coming back. And when the early part of the war, when we were kicking butt in Iraq, was great, and kicking butt in Afghanistan was great. And then when we began to pull out of Iraq, you could see a different reaction in the vets that are wounded coming back. I mean, all the vets were gung-ho. All the vets wanted to stay in the service. It was male, female, didn't matter what branch of service. They were unbelievable. But then when we went back into Afghanistan and you see what's going on and then we pulled back out again, you could see a complete total change in attitude. And for the first time, vets started talking to me about what it must have been like in Vietnam. When you go in, you fight, you lose a bunch of people, and then you pull back out and the place goes right back to the way it was for the last 1,000 years. But you could see it. And it was dawning on these young vets, men and women, all branches of service, what the hell was our strategy? What the hell were we thinking? And that's been tough to watch because, to me, it was a rerun of 50 years ago, all over again. And, you know, as you guys know, young military vets will do anything you ask them to do with the right leadership. But they want to make sure it's worthwhile. And that's a tough battle that all the characters in our Congress got to be dealing with. And I don't think they're doing a good job of dealing with that.
A good mutual friend of ours, and I won't say his name, but he messaged me one night. And he said, I can't sleep. He said, I haven't slept for the last 2 nights. He said, what the fuck did we go and fight for? To do the same shit again? To make the same fucking mistakes that we made in Vietnam? He said, I'm sick to my stomach. And I don't have an answer for the questions I have in my head. How? And then... And I would tell you, the problem is, again, we've talked about this, but if you watch the Road to 9/11, and again, it's on the History Channel for, I think, about another week. But if you watch that, you will go ahead and you'll see how Iraq comes up in conversations post 9/11. And everybody's head spins. And it's one guy, Don Rumsfeld, is lobbying for going to Iraq. And there's no relationship between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. None.
He's got no plan on what the hell to do when he gets there.
And so
he doesn't even know how he'll know whether he won or not. Who do we turn it over to? What, we send that asshole Bremer over there?
But the lessons of Vietnam that these guys lived through was don't do optional wars, because guess what? Normally they're not going to go according to plan. Normally it's not whitey-tidy and clean like the war, like Desert Storm was. Okay? Normally it doesn't go that way. And if you read a little bit about Iraq, right, you're going to find that the Brits shoved these three peoples together by making a mistake with a pencil, and the only way it's been ruled successfully was by an iron fist. And if you take that iron fist off, you better have a very, very heavy presence there to keep it together. Otherwise, you're going to get exactly what we got. And we've had Tony Zinni come on the program and say that. The war plan said that. Rumsfeld tore it up, and he did what he wanted to. And then you had generals who went there who knew the war plan got tore up and didn't come back and say, I don't care what the Secretary of Defense said, right? I don't care what he said. We're not winning there because we don't have enough ass over there. And as soon as we sent more people there, the thing fucking cooled out. And then I will tell you this, and I have a problem with the general officers and the flag officers of the American military. The problems that we're seeing in the United States Navy were because people did things with the number of ships, people did things with the number of personnel, and nobody in the Navy pushed back and said, fuck no, you can't do this. Do you know what you're asking us to patrol with fewer and fewer and fewer, and at some point it's going to snap. You can't stretch the rubber band that tight and then wind the crank and get it going at 9,000 RPMs and think that something isn't going to malfunction. Yet we
Mac,
do it.
Calm down. Calm down, Mac. If you go to my website, whatsreallyhappening.com, I wrote in 2002.
Wait a minute.
They're going to Iraq.
Wait a minute. What website?
This is a website. I used to have a blog that I used to upkeep. I don't keep it up anymore, but it's still out there. Whatsreallyhappening.com. In 2002, I wrote on the website about going into Iraq. I said, how the hell can you go into Iraq without knowing when you win, what do you do when you win, who do you turn it over to, and how do you get out? Now, that's not a whole lot different than what Zinni was asking. Zinni was in a position that people were paying attention. You can't go in unless you know what the hell you're going to do with the country once you're there. And we had no clue in 2002. We didn't know what we were going to do with Iraq. You figure we get rid of Saddam Hussein, everybody's going to fall into being a Democrat or Republican. It don't work that way. I understand why you guys got frustrated, because you've seen the same shit we saw.
Well, you know,
50 years earlier.
It's just, and that's what, to me, sitting there was so depressing about watching it. You know, if you start swapping names in that series, you know, you get the road to where we are in Afghanistan, and you get where we are in Iraq. And, I mean, think about it, Mac.
Why the documentary is so important.
Right.
People have to know this now.
Right.
And we need more veterans running for Congress and the Senate. We need more like Tammy Duckworth and Brian Mast and people like that. Clayton Hinchman that's running down in Georgia. I don't care what party they are. Get into Congress and Senate and be out there.
Yeah, because let me tell you, Congress, especially the Senate, is broken, and we've got to fix it. And you know, somebody sent me an email. The Ohio man sent me an email when I was talking about the filibuster thing. You know, look, they play parliamentary parliamentarian games now to pass legislation. Or we're going to tweak it, but we have to tweak it within these kind of limits so that we can do it as a part of reconciliation, and reconciliation has different parameters. You know what? Look, then get that bullshit 60 vote cloture thing. Get filibuster. Get them out of the Senate. Make it like the House, right? Pass the legislation. Do the business of the nation and stop. You're not going to have a 60 vote majority, right? The nation ain't set that way. And so, and you can't work together anymore. And again, I've eliminated the word bipartisan because it's all partisan. So you can't work together to craft legislation that both groups of partisans can support. And so you have to play this other stupid fuck game. And we don't have the people that'll do that. And so as a result, the DOD is on its ass because of sequestration.
What you and All Marine Radio got to do is start a campaign in Texas, Gunner for Congress. We need the gunner in Congress. Imagine how beautiful that would be.
Smile and wave, boys. Smile and wave. The, wow.
When we do these crazy things, we pay a huge price for this stuff.
Right.
And you know, Mac, I mean, you go in combat, it doesn't go away after a couple of months. I mean, we got a lot of guys that heal, but they're not healed internally. It takes a lifetime.
Right. Well, if you ever, and again, the best advice you ever get is you're not going to heal. You're going to learn how to surf it, and that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, or put it in the box.
Right, and some days, right, it's 6 to 12 inch swells with no wind. Other days,
yep.
Right, it's heavy surf, right, 12 to 15 footers and a whole lot of wind. It's not pleasant. And so watching that, I know for my friends, was pretty disturbing. Pretty disturbing to think that we could put ourselves in the same situation as a nation. And not only that, but we've destabilized the Middle East. And now it looks like we're kind of turning it back. But we're trying to turn it back to get it back to where we were when Saddam Hussein was there. Right? And then once we do that to get those pieces stable, then we have to deal with Syria. And, oh, by the way, the Kurds, they want out. But the Turks, a NATO ally, they say no. And the Iraqis, an ally, they say no, too. The Kurds have been our best allies.
The Kurds have been the only real ally.
What the fuck do we do with that shit sandwich? Right? Put some. Are we going to turn our back on the Kurds like we turned our back on the South Vietnamese people?
I think Mac ought to run for Congress from Southern California.
Oh, man.
What a fresh air. Oh, my God.
Let me just tell you, that's nauseating when you think about that. To think that you know, we've asked the Turks and the Iraqis, you know, to everybody to go slow in this. And let me tell you, the only thing that's keeping the Kurds where they're at is the Iraqis right now can't do shit to them. Go ahead, go up to those Kurdish mountains and see what happens to you. You're going to get your ass kicked. Like you got your ass
and
ran out of El Anbar.
Kurds have functioning cities up there.
Yeah.
You can go out and go shop there and walk around.
Right. And so we watch what's going on in Spain with interest in terms of separatist movements, and you watch what's going on with the Kurds, and you're just sitting there thinking, are we going to do this again? Are we going to screw these people? The best ally we've had in the region, we're going to screw them? So anyway, I know you have to run.
I have to run. But,
a final comment in terms, if people haven't seen it, the Vietnam series, what do you say to them, whether they're veterans or not?
Watch it, whether you're a veteran or not, young or old, you need to see this. You need to get something that gives a bit of the truth in doses that you can know and understand.
There you have it. From the eastern shore of Chesapeake Bay, not Annapolis, but close to it, is Bob Nielsen. Now we understand.
Thanks,
all right,
Mac.
Sir.
Okay, take care.
No, have a great day. Thank you very much.
Ciao.
Here's an email. And I thought I was the only one that was sitting there with my stomach in a knot. I haven't said a whole lot to anybody, but I sat there night after night seeing the similarities between Iraq and Afghanistan, wrong decisions, people that don't stand up, and it made me sad. Made me sad for all the young Americans, male, female, that lost body parts, that died, the families that have dealt with that. Iraq was a completely optional war that we didn't have to do. A rule of thumb for the United States ought to be, if you don't have to do it, don't do it. As you said, Mac, within the last hour, wars are not things that you can control very easily. They get outside the box. And once they get outside the box, God only knows what happens. I did enjoy the series, though. I thought it was very informative. It certainly made me see things through a different lens, a longer lens in history, and I think that's a good thing. I like you, though. I really need to go back and read relative to the expansion of the ground war in Afghanistan. What in God's name were we thinking? Yesterday, you played the tail end of the Senate Armed Service Committee hearing that took place on Wednesday. In it, Elizabeth Warren was after Secretary Mattis about what was different about our current strategy. His response was, it's conditions-based, not time-based. And her response was, so that means we have an open-ended commitment to the nation of Afghanistan for its security. And she shook her head. I think that's a legitimate question. But I think Secretary Mattis's answer is absolutely right. If we want to take Afghanistan and see it become something that it's never been, it has to be an open-ended commitment. The thing that I'm encouraged about his response is this. We are not talking about American boots on the ground, brigades and regiments in the front doing the fighting. We're talking about a model that it looks like the DOD is comfortable with that got used in Iraq, which is us supporting with aviation and indirect fires, advisors there in small numbers, and that combination with a now more effective Afghan army, and then in parentheses, that's what he said, close parentheses, that could mean success. Or it could at least mean that that open-end commitment means to the Taliban that they're not going to win by force. But one of the things I learned in the Vietnam series is other people don't see it through our lens. What is our lens? 12 to 24 months? That wasn't North Vietnam's lens. They didn't care about their casualties, and they didn't care how long it took. I appreciate the program. I love to hear Nielsen talk. His grouchy, scratchy voice always makes me laugh, but his candor always makes me think. Have a good morning. Now, one of the reasons that this is a cool program is you get to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Guys who were there and guys who lived those things. But again, relative to the series, it keeps things balanced. It doesn't let itself get out of balance, which is one of the things I thought it did very, very well. There's some people that escaped, I thought, and again, you've heard me say it, but Robert McNamara, no relation, by the way, he doesn't get the blame that he deserves for not only being the architect of it, but also the lying that he did about it. I think history has and should judge him much harsher than Ken Burns' documentary did. The other thing that I wanted to kind of attach to that was I put up an article yesterday, and this is under the guise of footnoted history. And under the guise of footnoted history, and in the wake of Las Vegas, one of the things that we're going to now talk about is the gun control discussion, right?
Right.
Okay, so with the gun control discussion comes this. 33,000 Americans killed by guns last year. Right? Wow. By any stretch, that's a big number. All right. Now, would it surprise you? So when you hear that and you hear the gun discussion, pretty powerful discussion. I think we would all agree on that. And so I think if you listen to the program, you're pretty familiar with the website 538. They do statistical analysis journalism. And so one of the writers, female, wrote about, you know, she was all about gun control till she and her fellow researchers at 538 did research. And after she did the research, she realized that what she was advocating wasn't addressing the problem. So the read, it's a fascinating, fascinating read about murder. And we're going to take a break and I'm trying to think if we have time to play Captain Salamander before we bring I'm going to do the murder thing and we'll do Commander Salamander tomorrow. All right, so don't hate me. But I want to go through the numbers relative to and again, it's this idea of footnoted history. There's also an email I want to get to about a comment I made yesterday based on an email I had received. So sit back, relax, enjoy this. We're going to talk about gun death numbers in the United States. We're going to footnote and pull apart the number 33,000 gun deaths in the United States, and we're going to see where they come from, what it's all about. So, All Marine Radio continues. 8:33 on a Thursday. Don't touch that dial. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOC community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.